Blog Talk Radio.
The Late Shift with Stephen Bell is presented live and uncensored and contains adult language. The views, opinions, and verbiage expressed do not reflect those of LordsOfPain.net, Lords of Pain Radio, Blog Talk Radio, or any of their respective advertisers. That's all on me, for better or for worse. Regardless, listener discretion is advised. Now let's do this thing. Let's give it a bee-bop-bow. And now, coming to you live from the Late Shift Studios, recapping SmackDown Live here on Lords of Pain Radio, it's the Late Shift with Stephen Bell, with your host, well, me. Again, and yeah, still me. Let's do this thing, alright? Grab some fun. Do the crunch guitar. Come on, love. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome once again to The Late Shift with Stephen Bell. I am your host, Stephen Bell, hence why my name is in the title. And how are you doing? Man, we had us a fun night tonight, I would say, on SmackDown. It was a 180 from last night. We talked it over last night. You should listen to last night Late Shift, last night's Late Shift, if you have not done so yet, because Raw was a bit laborious to get through. It was a bit of a mess. And I don't think that anybody has really denied that or anything of that sort. I mean, maybe it's been a little too harsh from some people. I heard from probably about three or four people have tweeted me and sent me DMs and contacted me on Facebook. There were three or four people out there, listeners, who were in attendance at the show, and they had various things to say about how the whole Bailey, this is your life thing went off live. All of them seemed to indicate that the crowd was not feeling it. Now, I had at least one person who was kind of in favor of the whole thing, but admitted that they were kind of maybe blinded by their love for Alexa Bliss, which I can understand. But the other three were pretty much just like, yeah, they weren't having it, and there was a reason they weren't having it, and it was because it sucked. And I have to stand by my statement. I love me some Alexa Bliss. I thought she was pretty good and everything, but man, that just, it was not good, and it hurt the show as a whole. It was very rarely does something come along that is so bad that it hurts the show as a whole. And it wasn't just that, you know, that segment's fault. It had the misfortune of being kind of sandwiched in the midst of a bunch of matches that nobody really cared much about, you know? The first part of the show was all right until you get to the triple threat. Triple Threat was good. I thought it was a solid match. I liked the ending. I liked the whole thing. I thought it was a solid match. But then after that, it turned into just kind of a bunch of matches that people are not super duper into. You know, they weren't bad matches necessarily. I mean, you had the tag team match from the Cruiserweight division. That was pretty okay. You had Rich Swann and Noam Dar, which was pretty okay. They were, you know, it's not like they sucked or anything like that. It's just that they weren't exactly the hottest of feuds or hottest of matches. It was really just kind of a bunch of random folks thrown out there that people aren't super duper invested in. So when you take that kind of a thing and right in the middle of it you sandwich in one of the worst segments in Raw history, maybe, or at least it's being treated as such, that doesn't do a lot of favors for you, even if you do have the main event headed your way of Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins. That's a draw, you know, that's people want to see that. That's a good match. You know that's going to be a good match, but it might not be good enough to keep people around for the hour and change in between the good match that was the triple threat and the good match that's coming in the main event, especially when there's something as bad as the Bailey, this is your life thingy mabob that happened there. So that's basically what we talked over last night on the Late Shift, and it was, you know, I still feel the same way. With 24 hours of reflection behind me near about, I still feel the same way. It was a rough episode of Raw, and I stand beside my C-minus grade. It was middle of the road, and there were some good things that happened on there, but there were too many bad things that really kind of weighted it down. It wasn't worth sitting through all the bad, necessarily, to watch the good, unless you're like me, and you just like to watch it no matter what. You know, if you're just somebody who's going to watch the show no matter what and enjoy it for what it is, then that's fine. But if you're, you know, looking at it critically, or if you're somebody who's like, okay, we need to keep people, if you're looking at it from a business perspective, hey, let's keep people engaged into the all the way to the main event and all that good stuff. Well, you did not do a good job of that, Raw, in keeping the people around for the main event. Your casual fans were probably got tired of all the crap that happened in the midst between the two really good matches and changed the channel. It wouldn't surprise me in the very, very least if, you know, if that was the case. That having been said, we talked about just last week that ratings don't really mean a whole hell of a lot like they used to, you know. I'm sure that the YouTube numbers are on par with what they usually do. You know, the YouTube numbers are always rock solid for WWE across the board for Raw segments, SmackDown segments. That is a big indicator of interest. Then there's also Hulu. I'm sure that, you know, I don't know how they're going to wind up editing Hulu, but it wouldn't surprise me. They've probably already done it. It wouldn't surprise me if they went ahead and cut out that whole middle segment there. It wouldn't shock me in the very least. At the very least, I sincerely doubt that they're going to show it in its entirety because it just went on too long. But I suppose that, you know, we'll find out. We'll check that out at some point in the future. But either way, yeah, that's you know, the ratings don't necessarily mean everything, but I do bet that quite a few people tuned out before the main event came along, even if they were interested in seeing it. And so, you know, thus ends the run of Monday Night Raw, because Raw had actually been, if not on par with, maybe a little bit better than SmackDown here over the last few weeks. A lot of people attribute that to the whole Jinder Mahal thing and people just not being behind that push. Some people attribute it to being kind of formulaic over on the SmackDown side of things. And SmackDown was a little bit formulaic this evening in some fashions. We'll talk about that here shortly when we recap the show. But for the most part, tonight's episode of SmackDown was better paced. It was just a better episode. It didn't have all the negatives attached to it that the Raw of last night did. So SmackDown reclaims the crown this time around. You know, spoiler alert for anybody waiting to see what the grade's going to be. You already know it's going to be better than a C-. I'll tell you that right now. We had a pretty decent episode of SmackDown tonight. Lots of news coming out of it. Money in the Bank is... we got the big announcement last week as to what the Money in the Bank match was going to consist of and who all was going to be in it. But this week, we got a few more surprises, a few more matches announced, all kinds of stuff going on. Two relatively big matches. One very big, one pretty big match announced. We'll talk all of that here as we go over the course of the show. But for right now, I want to talk about the big one. Before we get to that, though, I want to remind you guys, you can get a hold of me all over social media. Look me up on Twitter. You can hit me up, follow me, all that good stuff. Communicate with me at Stephen F. and Bell. I'm more than happy to chit-chat with you here and there. Also, you can look for me on Facebook. Just look for The Late Shift with Stephen Bell. You can find me there. Like the page, share it around, all that good stuff, and I would be more than happy to chit-chat with you if you want to get at me via those means. But for right now, well, it's time to talk about the biggest news to come out of tonight. I don't even think that is arguable. Easily the biggest news to come out of tonight, and that would be the Women's Money in the Bank. Yes, it was announced, and we're going to talk about it right now on the Heat Seeker. Damn straight. We ain't necessarily seeking heat this evening, but we're about to talk about something interesting, and I feel the need to point it out. I predicted this last week. I said that this was going to happen. Now, apparently, some kind of news had been floating around that it was rumored. I was unaware of this news when I said this last week. I wasn't just going off of something that I heard somewhere, and I don't even know when that news necessarily broke. I just saw it on LOP a couple of days ago, but, you know, just covering my ass there and letting you know. No, I was just going based on a feeling. This felt like a special time, and we talked about it last week a bit here on this SmackDown edition of The Late Shift. In lieu of the fact that, you know, in light of the fact, actually, that they had the women's Hell in a Cell match last year, that main evented the pay-per-view. That was a big match. That is like, okay, women can have that kind of a big deal. You can throw gimmick matches at them, not just your simple gimmick matches either, not just like a submission match or things like that. No, you can throw big gimmicks at them and, you know, kind of let's see how they can perform in these big-time matches. And 9 times out of 10, at least when they've been given them the opportunity to do things of that ilk over the last year and a half, 2 years, they've been knocking it out of the park. And now the women of SmackDown have the opportunity to do exactly that. You do have Charlotte involved, of course, who is, you know, she's already main evented a pay-per-view before. She's already in the mix. She's got a pedigree about her for having performed in a scenario similar to this. The other women, not quite as much. Some of them are fairly young in the game, that being Carmella. You know, she's the only one. But then you've got people like Natalya and Tamina who have been around for a while, but they've never really been in this position either. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they react to everything. But regardless, we knew that going into tonight's show, we were supposed to have a fatal five-way to crown the new number one contender for Naomi's Women's Championship. Well, when it time came for that match, when it came time, pardon me, for that match to happen, they all came out there. They start fighting all over the place before the bell even rings, and the referee can't break them up. So you've got bodies just laying all over the place, and folks being put through tables and thrown into steps and barriers and ring posts and all this stuff. Just they're all beating the sweet bejesus out of one another. And after a solid, I don't know, like 3, 4, maybe 5 minutes of just fighting all over the place, the referee couldn't get anything done. He was trying to get him back into the ring, and nobody would listen to him. So the music hits, and out comes Shane McMahon, and everybody's laid out. Like, literally, they had fought to the point to where everybody was down. Charlotte was the only one who was standing on her feet by the time that Shane made it down to the ring. And he said, wow, this is incredible. Everybody wants their opportunity. And, you know, this match never even really got started because everybody's so hungry for their chance. And so here's what's going to happen at Money in the Bank. We're going to have a women's Money in the Bank match involving these people. The people in question here, Charlotte, Carmella, Becky Lynch, Natalya, and Tamina. So the Motley Crue, if you will, there. The only woman on the roster not involved, to the best of my knowledge, just kind of looking over things and trying to remember. The only other woman that could be involved would be, of course, Naomi, and she's the champion, so she won't be involved. Or maybe Lana. I could see maybe Lana being thrown into the mix. I do find it curious that, you know, they're not going to have the women's championship be defended, presumably, because there's nobody for Naomi to face. Unless Lana does show up and Lana winds up getting a championship opportunity, you know, in light of the fact that all the other contenders are fighting in the Money in the Bank, you know, for that opportunity. Maybe Lana could swoop in there and grab the opportunity and go at Naomi. I just don't necessarily see that happening. If Lana does show up in the mix of all of this, I think it would be more likely that she would wind up being added as a sixth member of the female Money in the Bank here, very similar to what the men did last week with Kevin Owens when he came out and protested. He wound up in the match. So instead of five, it's six. I could see a similar thing happening with Lana. I could definitely see that more so than her showing up and just getting a title opportunity because everybody else is occupied. But I wanted to bring it up because, hey, it is at least a possibility. Or maybe it's a possibility that we just don't see Lana yet. Maybe Lana won't show up until after Money in the Bank. Who really knows at this given point what the hell's going on with Lana? But the bottom line is that there's not really any other women, so this ties up everybody, and it does somewhat surprise me that Naomi will not be defending the championship at Money in the Bank, which is, I mean, you would have to say that Money in the Bank is probably, we don't know because we haven't necessarily seen a full year of SmackDown and brand-exclusive pay-per-views, but I'm going to guess that SmackDown is probably going to be the, pardon me, Money in the Bank, is probably going to wind up being the premier SmackDown exclusive event of the year, because Money in the Bank was quickly infringing. It had kind of taken over the King of the Ring spot that used to be there. There was always the Big Four, but King of the Ring was also a pretty big deal back in the day, and it was there for a time. It was kind of the Big Five, if you will, and then all the In Your Houses started showing up and whatnot. Well, I think that it was kind of Money in the Bank had elevated in status, and it gained a reputation to the point to where people, not just because of the Money in the Bank match, but just because it seemed like it was always quality. For some reason, that's a good time of year for pay-per-views to kind of gel together and become kind of fucking good. You know, that's back, King of the Ring used to be in June, you know? So, I don't know. Either way, I'm thinking, like I said, this is probably going to be the premier SmackDown exclusive pay-per-view event of the year. And it's kind of surprising to me that Naomi won't be defending the championship on it. But maybe she will be. Maybe some sort of surprise will happen. Who the hell knows at this given point in time? What we do know, though, is that, yes, indeed, we will be having a women's Money in the Bank match. I am firmly in favor of it. I had mentioned last week that, as mentioned before, it just felt like it was time. It felt like with the main event of Hell in a Cell, with the push that they've been trying to do, specifically on SmackDown, trying to hype the fact that the women are a big deal and SmackDown being the land of opportunity, all of that kind of marries together. You know what I mean? And just the sheer fact that the way that things have broken down here recently, there is no clear number one contender. It's very similar to a few years ago. Everybody was super pissed about that Intercontinental Championship match at WrestleMania that turned into a ladder match. I believe that who was the champion going into that? I can't remember off the top of my head who was the champion, but I believe it was the one that Daniel Bryan wound up winning. Either way, people were pretty pissed about that going into it because they were, oh, it was Wade Barrett who was the champion, King Barrett or Bad News Barrett, whatever Barrett he was at the time. It was old Barrett, Barry Barrett, walking his way into the WrestleMania ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship as the champ, and people were a little bit upset about that, it seemed like, because they were like, this is just sloppy. They just wanted to throw people on the card. I felt that it was justified and argued in its favor at the time, and for the same reasons that I am arguing in favor of this. There was no clear number one contender. They had worked the whole thing well enough to where, like, okay, this person has gotten a pinfall over the champion, and then, you know, oh, this group of people beat a group of people, including the champion, and that's been the same way here. You know, Charlotte and Carmella have both beaten Naomi. Well, Carmella has at the very least. Carmella's beaten her twice. Charlotte has been close, but then other chicanery happened with all these welcoming committee people showing up and beating the crap out of both of them. So, you know, then you move on down the line. The welcoming committee chicks, they wound up beating all of the babyface people multiple times. So it's one of those scenarios where there is no clear-cut number one contender, so I'm fine with them doing this Money in the Bank. I think that it makes perfect sense, and it felt like they were kind of building up to it, which is why I predicted the thing. But the big question would be, who's going to win? That is a big question, is it not? We've got, again, Charlotte, Carmella, Becky, Natalya, Tamina. You know, Becky is somebody that you can't necessarily overlook. Charlotte's got to be the favorite. You know what I mean? Charlotte has got to be the favorite in this entire thing. But that having been said, does Charlotte need it? No, Charlotte does not need it. Charlotte, more than anybody else involved in this match, does not need that Money in the Bank briefcase. You know, the Money in the Bank is very similar to the King of the Ring back in the day in that, you know, aside from like Bret Hart when he won it, you need not be a main eventer. You know, it's not going to be a main event former champion who wins the money, I mean, who wins the King of the Ring, or who have, you know, usually who will win the Money in the Bank. It's somebody who is looking for an opportunity. It's somebody who is looking to step up a level, you know, somebody who's on the verge of that. Now, Charlotte, she has main evented pay-per-views before, you know. Becky Lynch, she's a former women's champion, but I think that she is more in a position, but even more than her, I think the dark horse in this, the person you have to look at, and the person who I think may wind up winning, Carmella. Yeah, that's right. Carmella. Carmella has got a hot thing going on right now. The whole thing she's got with Ellsworth, that's a heat magnet, man. People are booing the crap out of Ellsworth every week, and it's highly entertaining. I could see that going on for a very long time, and he's coming out there announcing her and insulting people and everything. I could see that working for a while. I love the role reversal of him being the manager and her being the person going out there kicking ass. Love that. I loved it back in the day when Stevie Richards was kind of the manager for Victoria. God, I cannot tell you how much I loved that pairing. I adored that pairing. So, so very. It's one of my favorite things to ever happen in wrestling, frankly. And I really love this as well. I'm loving Ellsworth with Carmella. But Carmella has gotten some key victories. Carmella has beaten Naomi. Carmella, you know, got some licks in and had her first extended feud was with Bella, Nikki Bella. Her name escaped me for a moment. That's a pretty big feud to be kicking your career off with, you know what I mean? So she's on the cusp, you know. She's right in that position to where if she got pushed just a little bit further over the edge, Carmella could be something, you know. You had the impression that maybe she was going to be something right off the bat. They pushed her immediately into the whole thing with Nikki, and, you know, she was doing a really good job. But then Alexa came along, and Alexa really started getting some momentum behind her and just got so damn good that they couldn't ignore her. So Alexa kind of took over SmackDown last year. But I'm not completely convinced that it wasn't originally meant for Carmella to maybe be in that Alexa Bliss role. Maybe it's her time. Maybe now is her time. Maybe it's time for Carmella to get this victory, and she could be Mrs. Money in the Bank. She could have Ellsworth carry the briefcase around. He could announce her as Mrs. Money in the Bank. I mean, just I think she would do fantastically with it from a character standpoint. I also think that she is in the best position right now to be Mrs. Money in the Bank because, again, Charlotte doesn't need it. Charlotte's going to – Listen, there's only six women in the whole damn division. You throw Lana into the mix, eventually showing up, that's a grand total of seven. So any of these women, at any given point, they're going to get title shots, okay? The Money in the Bank thing is almost wasted on this. If I were to make any argument against a women's Money in the Bank, it would be the fact that it's not necessary due to the fact that there's only, you know, again, counting Lana, there's only seven women in the whole damn division. So, I mean, honestly, you're all going to get an opportunity at the title at some point or another, and you're probably not going to have to wait a whole hell of a long time for it, you know? So, Charlotte's going to get her chance. Charlotte might get her chance pretty soon. I could see, you know, SummerSlam is coming up, and I keep bringing that up. It feels like it's, you know, it's like it should be far away, but then again, we're 2 days away from reaching the midway point, at least, you know, the 6 month of the year of 2017. And it feels like 2017 just started. It feels like the year really is just now getting underway. I made mention of that in the Fact or Fiction column that was posted on Lords of Pain earlier this evening. You should go check that out. It's a really good thing there. Just scroll on down the page, find Fact or Fiction. But I digress. It does feel like it should only be, you know, like March or something like that. You know, it doesn't feel like 2017 has been around for all that long, and yet here we are damn near halfway through it. So, you know, we're almost to SummerSlam is what I'm getting at here. That's the moral of this story. And it seems like they would want to go for the biggest match they can pull off. And SummerSlam, you know, if you're really wanting to pull out the biggest female star on your roster to do something at SummerSlam, that person is undeniably Charlotte. You know, Charlotte and Becky are the two biggest stars. That's just the way that it is. And whether or not they wind up fighting each other, who knows? Maybe Naomi in the mix. Maybe it's Charlotte and Naomi. Maybe it's Becky. Naomi, I don't know, but I'm thinking Charlotte. It feels to me like Charlotte is going to be involved in whatever the SmackDown Women's main event type match is for SummerSlam. That just seems to make sense. And that's only a very brief amount of time away. So again, Charlotte doesn't need Money in the Bank because Charlotte is going to consistently be in the main event picture. Like, constantly. It's only a matter of time before she's the champion. It was only a matter of time before she's the champion when she walked in the door. From the moment she walked down there with the Superstar Shakeup, from that moment forward, it was only a matter of time until she's wearing that championship belt around her waist. So she doesn't need Money in the Bank. And Becky's doing – I could see Becky winning. Becky would be a fun Mrs. Money in the Bank. You know, I think that would be kind of cool. I'm not feeling that one. I'm just not she doesn't need it either. She's pretty consistently going to be in the mix as well. If it's not Charlotte, it's Becky. You know, she is going to be consistently in the mix there on SmackDown in the women's division going for championship opportunities. She doesn't need Money in the Bank in order to get up there and get her title matches. The other interesting one to me, though, is Natalya. Tamina, in my opinion, in this match, very similar to Samoa Joe in the Fatal 5-Way that's coming up this weekend. Samoa Joe is the one that you're just like, yeah, he's not going to win. Tamina's the same way. Tamina's not winning Money in the Bank. That's just, sorry, it's just not going to happen. You know, number love for Tamina and whatnot, but Tamina's not winning this. She's just not in the correct position at this given point in time. It would go over like a fart in church. Nobody would really care about Tamina winning the Money in the Bank. That said, Natalya is an interesting one sitting there. She has the whole career behind her of she was the women's champion once very briefly a long-ass time ago before it was even turned into like the Divas Championship and shit. So it's been a long time since Natalya was really in the mix. She shows up here and there, but she always loses, you know, so Natalya would be an interesting one, and I wouldn't really be opposed to it. I wouldn't be opposed to Natalya getting the Money in the Bank briefcase, cashing it in, becoming the women's champion for kind of, you know, she's coming towards the end of her career, you know? I mean, presumably. I'm sure she could continue going on. I think she's about my age. She's in her mid-30s. She may be a little younger than me. So, you know, she's in her mid-30s. She's getting to that point to where maybe it's starting to cross her mind. She's been doing this for a long time, since she was quite young, 17, 18 years old, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, she's probably thinking about things of that nature right about now. Maybe she wants to have kids or something with TJ. Who the hell knows if they would fit in with all the cats. But I digress. The Natalya as Mrs. Money in the Bank would be very intriguing to me. I don't know about the world at large. I'm not all that sure that a lot of people would be excited over the prospect of Natalya being the one to win the Money in the Bank briefcase. However, I think that would be pretty cool just because I like to see people getting their just due. You know what I mean? And Natalya deserves a title run. I think Natalya is talented enough, and she's put in enough work, and she's done enough, and she stuck around through the fitness model days and all that crap when she was being put in the ring with all these people who were dangerous and crappy and lame and only there because they looked pretty in a bikini or whatever the crap. Natalya put up with all that, and she has been consistent throughout. She's not the best in the ring, but she's been fairly consistent throughout all of that. She's definitely got her shortcomings, but she has her pluses as well, and it'd be cool to see her get a championship run before she leaves. That having been said, though, all of that having been said, I go back to my original statement. My pick, my early pick, at least at this point, for the Money in the Bank winner, Carmella. Carmella seems like she is in just if you look at historically Money in the Bank, if you look at, you know, some of the bigger names to win it, some of the most notable Money in the Banks, Carmella is in that role right now. Carmella, where she is right now, feels like it did when Edge won Money in the Bank. It feels like it did when Dolph won Money in the Bank. It feels like it did when CM Punk won Money in the Bank, when Daniel Bryan won Money in the Bank the first time. Well, he only won it the one time, but you know what I mean. It feels like that. She's on the verge of potentially being something. You know, the big hog beside her does not hurt in the very, very least, because I think they could be a very hot act. I think that could be a super hot act. Can you imagine Carmella with Ellsworth going up against babyface Charlotte Flair long about November as we get towards Survivor Series or even at the Royal Rumble or something like that? That could be a red hot act for the women's division over there on SmackDown. I like it. I like it a lot. So Carmella is my pick to win the women's Money in the Bank over there on the SmackDown side of things. And we'll see. Either way, regardless of who winds up winning, what we have here is kind of a historic thing. You know, we've never seen anything like this. I'm glad that we're getting it. I think that it's going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to seeing how it all goes down. I'm looking forward to seeing the performances that these women put forth. I'm looking forward to all of it because it's, I don't know, it's exciting. You know, I said that a moment ago, pardon me, it was kind of a minus for this thing. If I were making an argument against it, it was kind of a minus that there's only like 7 women in the entire division. So, you know, really, does Money in the Bank really mean anything when you're all probably going to cycle through the main event scene at some point anyways? Well, that is a knock against the concept in general, I suppose, of having a Money in the Bank match. But that having been said, for the match itself, that makes it very, very intriguing because you're not entirely sure who's going to win. I could make an argument for each of these women. Maybe I just did, you know, over the course of talking about this for the last 20-plus minutes. Maybe I did make a bit of an argument for each of these women, but at the end of the day, I do think it's Carmella. But we'll see how all of this broke down, how this came to be. We'll also talk about one more, at least, big match added to Money in the Bank. Very big match added to Money in the Bank. Not as big as this women's Money in the Bank match, but a big one nonetheless. Money in the Bank is officially shaping up to be a pretty badass show. It's looking like it's going to be damn strong, and I'm already looking forward to it. We also got an announcement for next week. You know, they've gotten to where they're announcing what is the match going to be next week. They announced a big one for next week. We'll talk about all of that, all of the stuff that went on tonight on what was a pretty damn good SmackDown here in just a moment. But first, we do indeed have a couple of bills to pay here, you know, keeping it free here for you on LOP Radio. So I invite you to check this out right here. All right, we're back in the mix here on The Late Shift. Again, you can follow me on Twitter. Just look for me at Stephen F. and Bell and interact with me there. You can, you know, send me messages or tweet at me, and I'm happy to chit-chat with you back and forth about this here wrestling stuff and, hell, maybe some other stuff, too, if you got something on your mind, some horror movies or music or TV, just any kind of entertainment thing you want to throw my way or, hell, you know, just whatever, whatever. Maybe you need some advice from an experienced guy like myself who's been through a lot of bullshit. Maybe I could help you out. If at the very least, tell you what I did so that you can do the exact opposite. You know what I mean? So, yeah, there's always that. And you can always find me on Facebook. Again, just look for The Late Shift with Stephen Bell on there. You will find the page. Give it a like. Share it around. All that good stuff. You guys are the ones, you know, it says in the and the little catchphrase kind of for LOP Radio at the end of the schedule that I'll be playing later on, so you guys know all what all's coming your way before we grade this bad boy. There's, you know, it says that it's all about the fans' voice, your voice, here on LOP Radio. And that's true, because you guys are the ones who grow this. It's not us. You guys are the ones who spread the word and who help us grow this thing and who have made it even bigger and better over the course of the last 4 years. We have now officially now embarked upon. We're in year 5 for LOP Radio. And who the hell would have ever thought that I would have gotten this far? So thank you guys so very, very much for doing what you do. And keep it up. Keep it up. Let's make year 5 the best damn year we've had so far. We've done it so far. Every year has been better than the last. Year 5, just, hell, let's blow the year 4 out of the water. You know what I mean? But speaking of blowing things out of the water, you know, we mentioned before that Raw was a little bit lacking last night, to say the very, very least. SmackDown, well, were they able to take advantage of kind of a, You know, they whiffed. They struck out last night on Monday Night Raw, even though they had some strong matches, which is a bit unusual. You know, usually Raw has mediocre matches and okay segments, whereas SmackDown has mediocre segments and okay, you know, pretty good matches typically. And every once in a while you'll get a real good strong match, like once a month or so, you'll get a really good strong match or two on Raw. Last night had two really strong matches on Monday Night Raw, but it seemed like just about everything else was lame as shit. Some of the backstage segments were okay, but a lot of the other stuff was just weak sauce, man. We'll see how it all winds up breaking down. You know, I'm still excited for Extreme Rules this Sunday, and I'll be coming your way with the Aftershock program on that one, so we can go through it together, whatever the reaction is to that program, here live on the air with immediate reactions. But SmackDown had an opportunity here to really kind of steal back the crown. You know, Raw's maybe been a little bit better than them. They've been kind of a little bit more momentum on their side over the last few weeks. Perhaps SmackDown could take opportunity here, grab the opportunity here, be the ultimate opportunist, if you will, and take advantage of the fact that Raw was reeling a little bit as we came from Atlanta, GA, here this evening for the Blue Brand. And we immediately start in the ring with the United States champion, Kevin Owens. He is hosting another edition of Kevin Owens's Highlight Reel. He welcomes us, says that he's the new host, the new face of America, all that good stuff. He makes fun of Chris Jericho and blah, 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 and he's a loser, and I took this from him. He thought that he was a great host, and he starts talking about Money in the Bank. He will win and go on to win the WWE Championship. He will, well, the WWE title. He will be the face of the entire WWE Universe, holding both championships. And his guest this evening, he wants to introduce them right now. He beat the last guy who ran around calling himself a rock star, and, well, you know what? Here's somebody else, the rock star of WWE, the artist known as Shinsuke Nakamura. Shinsuke makes his way out there. They've done a few adjustments to his entrance, which are not needed. I don't know. There's the darkness at the beginning, and then his name pops up and everything. But when his name pops up, they kind of – it wasn't pyro, I don't think. I didn't see pyro. Maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention. It sounded like, you know, like that loud ass sound of like a spotlight coming on, you know, like when Commissioner Gordon shuts on the bat signal, or just that, you know, that loud sound. That's what it sounded like. And when he got into the ring and he did the dangly off the rope thing, they played the same sound effect as the spotlight came on. So, I mean, it doesn't detract horribly or anything like that, but it's also completely unnecessary. That's not needed in the very, very least. Just let Shinsuke come out there to his music with all the cool lights. If anything were going to be added to Shinsuke Nakamura's entrance, the only thing that I would possibly add to it is something that WWE doesn't mess around with very much, and that would be lasers, maybe. You know, back in the day, like, look up Christian's old entrance, Christian Cage's old entrance in TNA. Christian Cage had a badass entrance in TNA back in the day with just smoke and lasers all over the place, and he had a cool song that was basically a ripoff of his WWE song, but it was a really cool entrance, and I could definitely see a scenario with, like, red lasers cutting through the darkness and everything as Shinsuke starts coming out with the, you know, with the strobe lights and all that effect. Lasers could look pretty cool, but we don't need weird little ka-chunk sound effects just spontaneously coming on in the middle of nowhere. That was kind of dumb, but I digress. Shinsuke Nakamura makes his way down there to the ring. The fans are singing his song even after it stops playing. Owens says that he doesn't care if Nakamura thinks he's a superstar. This is Owens' show. He's had enough of that stupid little dancing and all that crap. He doesn't care if the people are singing his song. He doesn't care about any of that. He wants him to know that, as he said, he beat up the last guy who claimed to be a rock star. He beat him into retirement, that being Chris Jericho. Nakamura goes to answer. He says, Kevin Owens. But before he can spit out whatever he's going to say next, Baron Corbin's music plays. He makes his way out there to interrupt. He says that no one cares what Nakamura has to say. The crowd does not agree with that sentiment. He also starts talking about how, you know, this is the highlight reel. How about we show some actual highlights from a real superstar? And we see a replay of what happened last week when Baron Corbin beat the sweet holy bejesus out of Sami Zayn. Owens is like, really? You just interrupted my show to come down here and show a clip of you beating up Sami Zayn for like 2 minutes last week? That's nothing. I've been beating up Sami Zayn for 15 years, and the crowd kind of liked that. Owens wants to see Corbin to leave. He tells him to get out of here. Corbin's like, oh, you want me to respect your authority there, Cartman? Nakamura laughs at that, and Corbin's like, what are you laughing at? And, you know, I'm going to continue making highlights before I win Money in the Bank here in a few weeks. Nakamura finally speaks up. He reminds Kevin Owens that he pinned him in the middle of the ring last week, and he reminds Baron Corbin that, hey, you know, you lost to Sami Zayn last week, and he's beaten you twice now. That doesn't set well with the bad guys. They go, both of them, to attack Nakamura, and he's trying to fight off the double team, but they eventually, you know, they get the best of him and beat him down in pretty short order. But here comes Sami Zayn, of course, and you can already tell what's coming next. Sami runs down there. He makes the save and gets them both out of the ring, that being, you know, of course, Baron Corbin and Kevin Owens. They're out of the ring. They're standing there looking all mad and everything as Sami and Nakamura are standing in the ring. Sami winds up getting the microphone. He says, you know, I've got nothing to do, and I'm pretty, you know, not happy right now. I don't think that any of you guys have anything to do. How's about this? How's about Shinsuke Nakamura and Sami Zayn taking on Kevin Owens and Baron Corbin? We go to commercial break. When we return from the commercial break, well, we have ourselves a match. And it didn't even take the ghost of Teddy Long this time. I guess Sami Zayn alone was enough to get it done after, of course, Shane McMahon made it official. But again, as soon as Baron Corbin walked out there, I knew that we were going to have a tag team match. It's just become so predictable anymore. That is, I can't even remember the last time that we just began an episode of a WWE program, a mainstream, not NXT. We start that every week with this, but Raw, an episode of Raw or SmackDown where we just begin the show and people are in the ring ready to have a match. You know, I mean, it happens every once in a while, and it haven't really been that long even since it happened. But man, it is certainly few and far between. That would be awesome. And that would be a super cool way for SmackDown to really set itself apart. What if, you know, for SmackDown to show that we're more about the wrestling than the sports entertainment, whereas Raw is more of a sports entertainment storyline-driven program, we're going to start each show with wrestling in the ring. We're going to begin every single episode of this program with, you know, almost everything. They could do some gimmicky things from here and there, you know, here and there in the ring. But not every single night of SmackDown or Raw or both or just endlessly has to begin with somebody in the ring fucking talking. You know, that goes all the way back to the Attitude Era. It got old back then, and, you know, everybody talks about how great the Attitude Era was, and I've spoken about this before. I was a fan of the Attitude Era, too. I love the Attitude Era just fine, but it was mostly about the people who came out of it, your Stone Colds and your Mankinds and, you know, I guess The Rock, if you like him, and Triple H, and, you know, the people who were around at that point. But there were plenty of other sucky things going on, too. You know, you had crap like Val Venus getting his pee-pee chopped off, and, you know, just all this, you had the Job Squad running around, and Al Snow talking to a head, which was entertaining, but come on, man, come on. Is that really what you're dying to see? You know, I guess we kind of have a similar thing with Eric Rowan talking to his mask nowadays, but I digress. But also, that was when it really started with, you know, back in the day, it used to be people coming out and they would begin Raw with matches. And there would be matches throughout the course of the night. And other things would happen backstage, and maybe there'd be an interview midway through the show or something, but it was matches that had happened. And then Attitude came along, and Stone Cold started getting hot, and all this stuff, and all of a sudden you're beginning every single show with somebody standing in the ring to do an interview, or, you know, they're setting up the narrative for the entire episode. You don't have to do it that way. This is professional wrestling. People are tuning in to see professional wrestling, and if the first thing you show them is wrestling, and then immediately afterwards you're like, oh, also, by the way, we got this match and this match coming up, then you could even do a segment or something, you know, do it backstage, or some other thing. It doesn't always just have to be people standing around in the ring, and then another one comes out, and then another one comes out, and you've got yourself a tag team match, because that is happening every single week, it feels like. It used to be the Teddy Long special. I mentioned this last night. Now it's just the WWE special. There's nothing, it's not even special anymore. It's just, it's de rigueur. It's the thing that happens every single week. Somebody's going to be in the ring talking shit to somebody else. Some other person's going to come out there to either defend or help, and then somebody else will show up, and then maybe a couple other people will show up. But either way, what you're going to be left with is this scenario leading to some variation upon a tag team match. And it's not like the matches suck. You know, Shinsuke Nakamura and Sami Zayn versus Baron Corbin and Kevin Owens, dude, I'll watch that any day of the week. You know what I mean? I'm not bitching about the match or the quality or the people involved. It's just, damn, can't we do something a little bit different? Couldn't we set the match up in a slightly different way? Even if it was the exact same match. What if, like, we were having an interview backstage with Sami Zayn and Baron Corbin attacks him, and then Kevin Owens is walking by, or Shinsuke Nakamura comes and helps him, and then Kevin Owens shows up to beat up Shinsuke, or, you know, any number of things that could really kind of happen backstage to kick these things off, actual issues, and then Shane could make the tag team match. It doesn't have to start with just 5-10 solid minutes of blah, 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 when you already know exactly where it's heading mere moments into the segment. If it was unpredictable, it'd be one thing, but we know exactly where every single one of these segments is headed. You always know. It's gotten to the point where if you watch this to any degree of regularity, you know exactly when a tag team match is coming. There's no avoiding it whatsoever. And that's exactly what happened tonight. We had ourselves a tag team match. As mentioned, Shinsuke Nakamura and Sami Zayn taking on Baron Corbin and Kevin Owens. And it was good. Of course it was good. Look at who's involved. Duh. It was good, you know. We came back from the break, and Nakamura is in the ring with Baron Corbin. And hell, that's a match I would definitely watch, dude. Baron Corbin's a guy who is really coming into his own. I've raved about him for a long time here on the Late Shift, and before that on Aftershocks, before I had the SmackDown Late Shift. But, you know, I've loved watching his evolution, and I'd really enjoy seeing him just have a really balls-out great match with Shinsuke Nakamura. Give them like 15 or 20 minutes, and let Baron Corbin show me what he can do. You know, you put him in the ring with somebody like Shinsuke Nakamura, and I guarantee you, Baron Corbin would show you what he's made of, whether it's something good, whether it's something bad, whatever, but he would show you what he is made of in a match of that ilk. That would be pretty cool. That's something that I am anticipating. We've still got like 3 weeks, like 2-3 episodes of SmackDown left before we hit Money in the Bank. Hopefully that match is part of the entire thing as we build up to Money in the Bank here. And like I said, just a few weeks, 3 weeks away from now. But for now, it is a tag team match. We wind up with Nakamura getting beat up a little bit here, and in comes Kevin Owens. They're going at it. Sammy's in there now, and they're fighting all over the place. It's your usual shtick. We come down toward, we get a commercial in the middle of everything, and when we come back from said commercial, coming towards the end of this whole ordeal, Sammy nails a big blue thunderbomb on Kevin Owens and gets a two count off of that one. Owens then is able to get in there. Oh, pardon. He's able to get the tag. And Corbin has the referee distraction, or Owens comes back in and keeps control of Sami Zayn, taking him to the corner, beating him up, whooping him down. Corbin tags back in, keeps up the attack. They're cutting things in half here. They're not allowing Nakamura to get into the ring, so Sammy's just getting beat on until he can find some way to overcome, if he can find some way to overcome, and he does. He gets a big tornado DDT, or at least he tries to. And Baron Corbin blocks it, slams him down, talking smack. It's not good times, you know. But then we got the big blue thunderbomb on Kevin Owens for a two count as we came back from a commercial break. Corbin winds up coming in there, knocking Nakamura off of the apron to prevent the tag. There's, again, cutting the ring in half like good heels do. Sammy gets a roll up for a two count, but Corbin takes back control, dropping Sammy again, using his size to his advantage, talking smack the whole time as he is working Sammy over. But finally, Sami Zayn is able to get away from him long enough to get the tag to Nakamura. Nakamura comes into the ring, and he just starts unloading. He's unloading on anything that is in his path, specifically in this case, Kevin Owens. He hits a big running knee in the corner, positions Owens over the top turnbuckle, charges in with another high knee, gets a two count off of that one. Owens is able to fight Nakamura off, but he winds up taking another knee in the mix of all this. Nakamura drops him yet again, goes for the pin attempt, but Baron Corbin comes in to break it up. Sammy then attacks Baron Corbin, unloads on him. The referee is backing him off, trying to break this whole thing up. Sammy sends Owens into Corbin in the corner, and Corbin is pissed about this. He yells at Kevin Owens. Owens shoves Corbin. Corbin punches him right upside the fuck. Sammy winds up clotheslining Corbin out to the floor, and meanwhile, Owens, having just been punched in the face, turns around into the Kinshasa by Shinsuke Nakamura, and we have ourselves some winners. Shinsuke Nakamura and Sami Zayn are the winners of this tag team match, and it was highly entertaining. Everybody performed exactly on the level that you would really want them to. We got to see the big Kinshasa. Good stuff all around here, honestly. I just wish that they would take a less predictable path to getting to matches of this sort, because damn, you know, damn. But it was highly entertaining. I'm glad that we got to see the match. This was good stuff here. Nakamura and Sami Zayn with the big victory in the tag team match to begin the, you know, the matches, at least, on SmackDown. Afterwards, they stand tall, you know, meaning Nakamura and Zayn. They're kind of eyeing each other up as Nakamura dances around and does all his twitchiness and whatnot. We go out to the announcers. They plug Extreme Rules coming up, the Fatal 5-Way, all the things that are coming this evening as we go to commercial. When we return, The Usos are in the ring. They talk about how everyone is looking salty this evening because they are still the champions. They make fun of American Alpha, who, frankly, did American Alpha die? You know, did something happen and nobody bothered to tell us? Is Jason Jordan, like, lost somewhere? Is this like a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids scenario? They can't find Chad Gable. He got shrunk by a shrink ray, and now they're like, shit, I think he's in this can of Coke. We better hold on to it. Are you in there, dude? You know, something. What has happened? Because when is the last time we even saw American Alpha? It's been weeks, and it's been more than a month, I think, since we've seen American Alpha. I haven't heard anything about being hurt. I haven't seen what the house show circuit is like, so I don't even know if they're competing on house shows. But damn, that's ridiculous. American Alpha was supposed to be in the catbird seat by this point. They were supposed to be the shit by now. But no, it's back to the Usos. And, you know, I'm not hating on the Usos or anything like that. Yeah, I've got love for the Usos. But damn, man, American Alpha were arguably the best team in NXT when they were there. It was either them or the Revival. And they're being wasted. For all the love that people want to give SmackDown, the one big unforgiven thing for them, in my opinion, the thing that I just can't get over, the one thing that I can't just be like, you know, if I say SmackDown's great, I always have to add the but. And the but is American Alpha. What the fuck are you guys doing with American Alpha? Find them. Find them and get them on my television because I love American Alpha. Everybody else would too if you would fucking do something with them. But I digress. The Usos talk smack about American Alpha. They talk smack about Breezango, who they've now beaten a couple of times. You know, how they're all salty. They take a crack at the Atlanta Falcons because they are in Atlanta GA this evening. I used to live there briefly in my youth. They go on about how there have been no other WWE tag team champions that go as hard as them, but they are interrupted. Don't you dare be sour. Clap for your world-famous two-time champs and feel the power, because it is a new day. Yes, it is. The New Day make their way out there, making their SmackDown debut. If you are a viewer of Talking Smack, then you probably knew that this was coming. It wasn't made officially official that they were going to be coming out this week, but they were on Talking Smack last week. They just kind of showed up out of the middle of nowhere. It was real fun. They got Renee Young to do the pelvic thrusty dance. Even though she was sitting down, it was still... But, you know, just good times were being had last week on Talking Smack. So you knew they were coming real soon. They were hyping up the fact that Kofi's ankle's okay and all this stuff. It was just any day now type thing. And lo and behold, if it wasn't today being the day, the New Day, if you will. So the New Day make their way out there. The Usos, of course, get out of the ring, let them have the ring. They don't want no part of three dudes coming out there necessarily. They're all having a good time, you know, playing the trombone and all this good stuff. Xavier Woods announces that they are back, and he gives a shout-out to his mom in the crowd, says she's wearing a nice shirt. I'm guessing it's probably a New Day shirt. Mentions how Atlanta is his hometown and all this good stuff. Kofi goes to talk, but he is interrupted by the Usos, who are standing at ringside, as mentioned. They say that they had the tag division on lock, and they welcome the New Day to the Usos penitentiary. Big E says that he knows what they do in the penitentiary. Hint, hint, wink, wink. But as far as the SmackDown tag team titles go, they like them and they want them. Woods says they can do this the easy way or the hard way. And Kofi says that the answer better be yes. So that's an official challenge laid out there to our friends the Usos. The Usos, they're not necessarily feeling that. But they ain't backing down, you know. They just, you know, they're just not feeling that. They say that the New Day better wake up from the little fairy tale because this is about to get real here, you know? They're talking all kinds of smack. The New Day not really taking them very seriously. And, you know, it is what it is. The Usos talk about how they're going to take them out back and do them like old Yeller. And it's like, oh, that's too extreme. That's too much. It's just classic New Day stuff. But then we wind up hearing from Xavier Woods. He tells us that they were told by Shane McMahon that the Usos have special opponents coming up at Money in the Bank, but he can't remember who. And, of course, the whole crowd goes, who. Kofi reveals that it will be the New Day versus the Usos at Money in the Bank. They dance around. The Usos mean mug as they leave, and that is what it is. So that is an official matchup there. It is the New Day taking on the Usos at Money in the Bank. The New Day are officially here on SmackDown. They've been gone for a little while. That is a good thing, in my opinion, because they were in danger of maybe their act getting a little bit stale. Hopefully they've, you know, incorporated maybe a few new things here and there. Maybe they're going to get some different opportunities to do some different stuff. At the very least, maybe being in new different surroundings will freshen the whole thing up a little bit. Maybe they can find American Alpha. Who the hell knows? But what we do know is that there will apparently be a big match at Money in the Bank. Now, I don't remember if it was said that it was going to be a championship opportunity. They said there was going to be a match, but I can't remember if they said they were going to defend the titles against the New Day at Money in the Bank. All that we know for right now, all that I know for right now and can tell you right now, is that we are going to have a match between these two teams. And that sounds pretty good to me, man. It's good to have the New Day back around. They're very entertaining. I'm hoping that we're going to see a lot of fun things over the course of the next few weeks. And honestly, with the New Day being who they are and the Usos' recent shift in characters and the way that they've been acting and the kind of weird promos and all the fire that they've had behind them, this could be very, very highly entertaining over the course of the next few weeks leading up to this feud. The only issue will be on down the road when, you know, the same thing happens on SmackDown that happened on Raw, and we wind up with the New Day facing the exact same teams over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. But hell, for as long as they've kept American Alpha off of television, you know, maybe they'll feel super duper fresh when they come back. It just kind of, doesn't it suck to be American Alpha at this point? They were supposed to be the shit by this point, you know? They were supposed to be in this New Day position. They were supposed to be the hot babyface act as we roll towards SummerSlam and, you know, the biggest party of the summer, second biggest event of the year and everything. American Alpha was supposed to be in that position by now, wouldn't you think? But no, instead the New Day got moved over, and now American Alpha is going to be playing second fiddle as babyfaces on the show, which is really not, you know, the greatest of positions. You know, they're probably going to remain maybe above Breezango, but who the hell even knows about that? Because Breezango is hot as shit right now. So who knows? Who knows? But we do know that the New Day is back. They will be facing the Usos at Money in the Bank. We then see AJ Styles backstage. He seems to be warming up for his match later on this evening against Dolph Ziggler. We then get, they tell us that we're going to be getting a look back at Jinder Mahal's Punjabi celebration. When we come back from the break, that's exactly what happens. We look back at the Punjabi celebration, some of the international media coverage that he's been getting in India and elsewhere, you know, and hyping up the fact that Jinder Mahal is a big deal, but they're doing the smart thing and they're not putting him on TV. They're kind of keeping him off TV for the moment, and, you know, he was on, but, I mean, he's not, like, coming out there and stuff. And last night was pretty cool, but not last night, last week was pretty cool. I liked the celebration, but it was brief. It was, thankfully, rather brief. They got out there. They did what they needed to do. They got the hell out of Dodge. If the Bailey, this is your life thing had been like that last night, then, man, we would have had maybe a different conversation about Raw. But it was not, unfortunately. But the Punjabi celebration was just fine and exactly what it needed to be. And I think that we had just enough Jinder Mahal this evening. We got to look back at the celebration, the media coverage, all that good stuff. And we would see a little bit more from him here in a little bit, which we'll talk about shortly. But we then go from there to another edition of the Fashion Files. They are ongoing. Just because they lost last week doesn't mean that the Fashion Files are over. We've got Fandango. He is... it's very film noir, you know, it's an old school, like, detective, private detective thing going on here. He's got the fedora and the trench coat and whatnot, and then he finds their office, and their office has been all trashed, and everything's all messed up, but then he sees a silhouette, you know, against the wall. He pulls his water pistol and says, "Freeze," and it winds up being Tyler. Tyler's dressed like a woman, you know, he's wearing a nice plunging neckline dress and a wig and all this good stuff. They are trying to figure out who it was that trashed their office, and they find some cologne, and, you know, they use their detective skills to determine that, you know, it's cologne. So maybe it's the colognes. Get it? Cologne, cologne. Get it? Get it? Yeah. They didn't say that at that given point, but we would find out later that apparently it is indeed the colognes who, you know, they think trashed the entire thing. So, yeah, they've got a new case. Looks like they're going to be going after whoever it was that trashed their offices there. But then we go out to the ring. It's time for the Fatal 5-Way Elimination Match. Charlotte versus Carmella versus Natalya versus Tamina versus Becky Lynch. This is a match that I was very much looking forward to. I was excited to see how it was going to go down. I did think that it was going to end in some sort of strange variety, or that something was going to go down in some strange variety so that we would wind up with a Money in the Bank match instead of just determining a single number one contender. I was saying exactly that last week. You can go back and listen to the show. I said exactly that, which is kind of cool. I like it when I'm able to predict things like that, because it doesn't happen often, and this was kind of a shot in the dark, but damn it, I was right. Yay for me. But I'm sure I'm not the only one who was predicting the stuff. Either way, though, I'm going to give myself a slight pat on the back, damn it. But I was looking forward to this match, though, you know, because I just, I don't know, it felt like it was going to be cool. I like elimination matches and stuff, you know, just... This had the potential to be cool, but they really did about the only thing that they really could here. You know, they couldn't really just have the match and have it come down to two people and then interference happen or something like that. No, it needed to just be completely up in the air as to who was going to be the contender. You couldn't have, like, two or three people get eliminated in the Fatal 5-Way Elimination match and then it come down to, you know, some sort of craziness, wonky thing at the end. It needed to be like this. And we already talked about this in the Heat Seeker. We had a big brawl breakout with everybody. They fight all over the place. Everybody winds up laid out, and the referee hadn't even had the chance to ring the bell. He's trying to get him in the ring so he can start the damn match, but they're just not having it. Tamina's taking apart the announce table, looking like she's going to murder somebody through it, and all kinds of craziness going down, but we wind up with everybody down. Everybody is down. Natalya has been powerbombed through a table by Charlotte, and just all kinds of chaoticness happening here. The referees are checking on Natty. The crowd is chanting holy shit a little bit. Not a whole lot, but a little bit. The bell never even rang. But then the music hits, and out comes SmackDown Commissioner Shane O'Mac. Shane McMahon makes his way down there. He shouts out Atlanta, what's up to Atlanta, gives props to the women's division. He says that the division is so crazy right now, the competition is so crazy within the division, that he really wants to do something big, a first, something truly historic. He announces that it will be Charlotte versus Natalya versus Tamina versus Carmella versus Becky in a Money in the Bank ladder match at Money in the Bank for the first ever Money in the Bank ladder match. Yay! He did not mention Naomi, of course. It's mentioned here. He did not mention Naomi. Of course he didn't. Why would Naomi need, you know, why would she need a number one contender's contract for her own belt? That's okay. But Shane gets a big pop for that, and everybody, you know, all the people standing at ringside, all the women at ringside, they look varying degrees of maybe a little worried, maybe excited. Charlotte certainly seems to be happy with it. It's very, very interesting, but I broke this down extensively there at the beginning, so no need to really do it again, but I really am. I just want to reiterate that Carmella seems – I mean, Charlotte's the favorite on paper, okay? We all know that. Charlotte's the favorite, but Carmella's the one you need to watch, in my opinion. Keep an eye on Carmella. She's in a perfect position to take advantage of something like Money in the Bank and really do something with it. But when we're done with all of that, we go to commercial break after that huge announcement. When we return, out come Fandango and Tyler Breeze, the Colognes, waiting in the ring. And that was, you know, the reveal of the fact that they think it was the Colognes who tore up their office there, their Fashion Files office, because they left behind a bottle of cologne. Get it? Get it? Right. So Fandango is Fandango, but he's still wearing his trench coat and his fedora and everything. Tyler, meanwhile, still dressed like a woman. They wind up coming out there. It's crazy. Breeze is in the ring first, and he's wearing the dress and the wig and everything, and he's challenging one, I believe it was maybe Primo, I can't remember which one it was, which of the two guys, to, you know, to come at him, and wind up ripping the wig off, whipping the dress off, and all this good stuff. And he's got him down, but then Breeze is able to shoot him with his water gun. Fandango shoots with his water. They're shooting these guys with their water gun, and they wind up sending Epico out to the floor and standing tall as we go to commercial. When we return, this has turned more into more of a, you know, a traditional style match. There's not water guns and dumb shit going on necessarily. And when I say dumb shit, please don't take it as actual dumb shit. I just mean stupid, as it is dumb, but it's great. You know, dumb can be great sometimes. There is ignorance and bliss. You know, that whole combination going on there. This is fun dumbness, I guess. Fun dumbo,
I suppose. But anyways, the colognes are, of course, in control when we come back from the break, because that is the rule of coming back from commercial breaks. Breeze winds up getting dropped from the apron by a cheap shot, and Fandango's looking to make a comeback, but Breeze is down the floor. He can't seem to get up so that we can get the tag out. Eventually, he comes back up there, but lo and behold, if he is not an old lady. No, he's not the old lady. He's the janitor. He's the janitor. Yes, Fandango has been getting beat down this whole time. Meanwhile, Breeze was over there getting undercover yet again. He's the janitor. He's got the mop and all this stuff. He gets the hot tag, comes in there unloading on both of the colognes. They wind up with Fandango and Primo are fighting over the mop. That allows Breeze to take advantage of the distraction that's going on. He nails the unprettier. He gets the one. He gets the two. He gets the three. Your winners of this match are Breezango, and that makes me happy. I'm really, really enjoying Breezango right now. I'm very curious as to how they're going to fit in to the tag division moving forward. I don't know if they're just kind of doing this to have a little fun with it or what, or if this is an indication of maybe a bit of a push. They kind of wound up doing with Breezango what I thought they were going to do with Jinder Mahal. If you'll mention, if you'll remember, in the weeks leading up to the last pay-per-view with Jinder and all that stuff, I was thinking, what they're probably going to do, Backlash was what it was, what they're probably going to do is they're going to wind up, putting him in this match just to kind of elevate him. He won't necessarily win the championship, but the sheer fact that he competed in the championship match and almost won, came close to winning, that is going to elevate him inherently. Well, that's what they did with Breezango. Breezango did a pretty good job in the match at the pay-per-view, and then they had another opportunity on SmackDown just a couple nights later. So they, proved themselves as being worthy contenders to the tag team titles, if not necessarily good enough to win them. So they've been elevated a little bit. I'm wondering how high they're going to go, or if they're even interested in pushing them up any further than they are right now. Maybe they're just going to sit here in this position. They're going to have fun with it. Who really knows? Every once in a while, there are people floating around like that. But for now, we're getting fashion files and stuff out of it, and I got no problem with that. That's fun stuff by me, man. I'm happy. I'm happy with Breezango getting the win over the colognes. Though it is a little bit unfortunate, I was hopeful that not everybody can win everything, you know what I mean? But I was hopeful that the colognes, when they came over from Raw, that they were, that they would first drop the tour guide gimmick, which they kind of did, but also that they would get a fair shake, because they're a talented tag team. But, it's arguable whether or not they've gotten a fair shake. Here they are, they're jobbing to Breezango, but that doesn't mean what it meant a couple weeks ago, Just like a month ago, if they had lost to Breezango, it would be kind of like, ugh, damn, the colognes, that sucks for them. But now, these are guys who had them a couple of tag team opportunities. They were just the number one contenders. So losing to Breezango isn't as bad as it used to be. You know what I mean? Maybe this is a good way just overall for them to add a little bit more of a competitive nature to the tag team division. But we'll see moving forward. With the New Day showing up, I think that is really going to put a hitch in the get-up of Breezango, just as I mentioned before with American Alpha. Because if you looked at the landscape right now, you'd have to say that, American Alpha, still probably number two. Breezango's more popular than them right now, but that's mainly because of the fact that American Alpha, as mentioned before, have been lost. They're apparently just out there in the wilderness somewhere. They're Blair Witching it somewhere out there in the woods and can't find their way back home for whatever reason. Meanwhile, Breezango are, the second most popular team now that the New Day have showed up. They were the most popular, but I would say that they were instantly demoted to second most popular team as soon as the New Day walked into the door. And they might be knocked down to even number three when American Alpha eventually show back up again. And that's that. Because over on the heel side of things, what do you got? You've got the Usos, who are blatantly the top heel team. The Colognes, I guess, would be the second. And then you've got the Ascension. And that's it. That's all the teams. There's like six teams. There's only so much variety you can have there. So I guess it's a good idea to try to elevate them here and there. Maybe Breezango will wind up with some tag team titles at some point. But in the meantime, whether they win them, whether they don't, I'm very entertained by what they have been doing as of here recently. They celebrate their victory over the colognes, and it's good stuff. We then go backstage. There's Renee Young looking just adorably cute and Canadian and yum. And she is talking to AJ Styles ahead of his match against Dolph Ziggler this evening. AJ says that he is building up momentum for Money in the Bank so that he can become a two-time WWE champion. Ziggler walks up at this point, and he interrupts. He says this might be the house that AJ Styles built, but he laid the foundation around here. He is the only one involved in this Money in the Bank match who has already won a Money in the Bank match and cashed in the briefcase to become the champion. Ziggler says he's going to do it again in 2 weeks, but tonight, you want to go right now? You want to go right now? AJ takes off his shirt. Looks like maybe we're about to have a fight, but no, let's save it for the ring. Let's save it for the ring. They're both ready to go, but we're going to wind up saving it for the ring. Ziggler tells Styles he'll see him out there. He walks off. He was just trying to get into his head. He was trying to just be a dick and kind of fluster him, and it seems like it worked a little bit here. Ziggler walks off grinning while AJ looks like he's hot and he's ready to fight and everything. So we'll see how that breaks down in our main event. But they let us know that still to come, Randy Orton will be here. He's going to be speaking for the first time since losing the WWE title a week and change ago. We go to commercial break. When we return, out comes the Viper himself, Randy Orton. And he gets a pretty decent reaction. He introduces himself. For everybody who's been living under a rock for the last 17 years, I'm Randy Orton. And, you know, for two of those years, nobody knew who the hell he was. If you were in the Kentucky area or whatever and you watched OVW, then I guess you knew who the hell he was. But, you know, for the last 15 or so years, yeah, we've known pretty much who he is. But either way, I digress. He talks about how he has defeated top names over the course of those 17 years. He's beaten Edge. He's beaten, you know, John Cena. He's beaten The Undertaker. He's beaten Shawn Michaels. He's beaten all these guys, and how this is in his blood because his father was in the first WrestleMania main event. And he goes on to say that his grandfather would slap him if he were alive for losing the WWE title to someone like Jinder Mahal, which was a very vaguely loaded comment, frankly. That's easy to take the wrong way. And I thought that he was immediately going to rectify it, to fix it, about how, you know, Jinder Mahal, you know, he hated people like Jinder who are arrogant, or he hated people like Jinder who cheat to get ahead, or no, but he just kind of left it. Frankly, it sounded vaguely racist. And he never tried to correct that, you know? And so, all right, it is what it is, you know. Cool, right on. Either way, his granddad would slap him across the face for losing the title to someone like Jinder, one of those people, if you will. No, that's terrible. That's terrible, but that is what it sounded like, though, damn it. Orton goes on to say that he's not going to talk about how he's going to beat Mahal at Money in the Bank. He's just going to go out there, and he's going to do it, just like his grandfather. You know, a little less conversation, a lot more action. He goes on to say, though, after just saying he's not going to talk about how I'm not going to talk about how I'm going to beat Jinder Mahal at Money in the Bank, you know, as I am saying, as I'm doing the exact same thing that I just said that I was not going to do. I'm doing it right now as I'm saying that I'm not going to do it. And then he continues. He says that Jinder, you know, he thinks that he has earned the respect of the crowd. He thinks that he has earned the respect of Randy Orton. He has earned something. But the only thing that he has earned is the right to get a good old-fashioned Orton family American ass kicking. Not a good old-fashioned passionate ass whooping, getting his shoes coat and his hat tooken. He says the Money in the Bank is in his hometown of St. Louis, and he won't be able to show his face there again if he doesn't get this one done. He says winning is the only option. He's going to stop talking now, and he will become a 14-time champion on June the 18th in St. Louis. He drops the mic. His music hits. He goes to pose while they're talking about voices in his head and talking to him, calling him Fred. Jinder's music then interrupts. And his awesome entrance thing up there on the Tron and all that stuff, the awesome staging thing that they do for him is happening, but there's no Jinder. Jinder doesn't come out there. He appears on the big screen. He doesn't actually appear in the building. He says that Orton is just like every other ignorant American. You know, he's telling all these stories of a bygone era, of how things used to be so great or whatever. He tells stories of how his father and grandfather were so great. Meanwhile, the country is in decay. He goes on, raises the title up, and is celebrating the fact that he is the modern-day Maharaja. The Singh brothers are revealed to be there with him. They are cheering for him, and they're all, you know, giving him an ovation as Jinder stares at the camera, and the camera zooms in on his face, and it was, frankly, a little bit boring. You know, it was nothing all that great. It was Jinder last week, his promo was all right, but this week it was just back to regular-ass, kind of robotic, reading off the script, Jinder Mahal, and that remains a shortcoming. You know, I couldn't tell you the last time that I frankly cheered for Randy Orton to win a match. I'm not I don't dislike Randy Orton, you know what I mean? I think he's a very talented guy. I enjoy watching him in the ring a lot of the time, but sometimes I do find him rather boring, and I've never cared for his character. He comes off exactly like what he is, which I firmly believe that in real life, Randy Orton's probably a prick. I don't know. I've never met the guy, but you've heard plenty of things about him, and he seems like he would just be a real douche nozzle. That's what he seems like in the ring, too. You know, it's kind of like The Rock. Like, The Rock, now, Dwayne Johnson, he seems like he's a super good guy. But back in the day, the character of The Rock was a douche nozzle. He was an asshat. He was a bitch. He was annoying. He was mean. He was an asshole. He was a bully. Any, you know, adjective that you want to stick on there, anything that you want to call him, well, it fit. You know, he was a bad dude. He was not a nice person. I didn't like him for it. He reminded me like a fucking frat boy or something like that. And there's nothing wrong with being a frat boy, but know who you are and, you know, embrace who you are. You know, don't act like you're some kind of awesome guy if you're really kind of a douche nozzle. And, you know, if you're going to be a douchebag, embrace your douchebaggery. I got respect for that at the very least. I can hang around a douchebag who knows they're a douchebag. You know, one of my best friends used to be a douchebag, and he knew he was a douchebag. He wasn't a douche to me, but he was kind of a douchebag. He was aware of it. Sometimes you just got to roll with who you are. Randy Orton, though, just seems like he's a douchebag all the time. So I don't really like Randy Orton a whole lot as the moral of this story. But I do not dislike him, you know? It's not like, fuck Randy Orton, I hate him or nothing. I say all of that to say that, again, I can't remember the last time I cheered for him to win a match, but I want him to beat Jinder. Not because Jinder is... oh, Jinder should never be the champion. Jinder is a jobber and blah, 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 blah. You know, I've spoken my issues about Jinder and his quick rise to the WWE title. And, you know, there's been the pluses and the minuses to it and all that good stuff. We've been over it and over it and over it. We went over it extensively last week. And I'm kind of done talking about that. The issue that I have with Jinder Mahal and the reason that I want him to lose this title, you know, at Money in the Bank is because of the fact that the guy is just a fucking robot. I'm done listening to him with his stilted robotic promos, and I just, you know, let him do something else. Get him out of the main event picture at the very, very least. You know, if I want a robot, I'll watch Randy. You know, that's the way that goes. But yes. We end with them applauding, the Singh brothers and you know, all that good stuff. They're applauding for Jinder. Then the camera cuts, and Orton doesn't say anything. He just climbs back up onto the corner. He poses. His music starts playing. Everybody cheers for him, and that's that. Still to come, though, our main event. It is AJ Styles taking on Dolph Ziggler. Go to commercial. When we return, we've got Rich Swann and Sasha Banks backstage. They're hyping tonight's 205 Live because Sasha's going to be appearing on 205 Live, or already has appeared on 205 Live. I think she is, like, actively appearing right now. No, it's already over. So she was on 205 Live, and, you know, I bet it was good stuff. But now it's time for the main event. We go out to the ring. Out comes Dolph Ziggler. AJ Styles comes on out there next. He's in front of his home state pop. They're calling it his home crowd, but he lives in Gainesville, to the best of my knowledge. Gainesville, you know, and Atlanta are not the same thing. That bugs me when they do shit like that, you know? And that's like... if I were wrestling and I showed up in Dallas and they were like, oh, it's his hometown crowd. Well, no, not really. It's 2 hours, okay? It's like 2 hours and change to my hometown. So I get it. Yes, we're in my home state. Maybe some people drove to see me and, okay, cool. But it's not his hometown. But either way, they love them some AJ Styles, which, frankly, is not much different from anywhere else that they go. It doesn't have to be your home state, your home crowd, your home anything, because everybody loves them some AJ Styles, the phenomenal one, running game right about now. I watched the Table for Three that aired last night after Monday Night Raw. It was Jim Cornette, it was Eric Bischoff, and it was our friend Michael P.S. Hayes. Got a lot of love for P.S. Hayes. They were talking about various stuff, and at the end of the episode, they were like, if you had control of the book, what would you do with WrestleMania next year? And it was determined, you know, they all threw their things out there. I loved what Bischoff had to say. You know, Bischoff feels like that Roman Reigns should be embracing his inner heel and he should really roll with that, that he should really, you know, he should be a full-blown heel by the time WrestleMania rolls around. I think that should happen too, but I'm becoming increasingly more and more doubtful that it will. I think they're going to have him be the middle of the road for the rest of his career. They really are going to make him the next John Cena in that regard. And you know whose fault that is? Everybody who has been booing him. Yeah, if you just would have embraced him for exactly what he was, and then maybe he would have had a more traditional career trajectory. But what you've had instead is that half the people love him like they're supposed to, and as Michael Hayes pointed out, he gets the John Cena pop, and that when his music hit, you hear all the high-pitched voices be excited, and then they're kind of drowned out by the deeper voices, the men voices. Women love him, kids love him, and the guys, the cool kids in the room, they don't love him a whole hell of a lot. So, you know, it's one of those type things, but he's getting a reaction, he's selling a shitload of stuff. I'm becoming more and more afraid of the fact that maybe Roman Reigns is never going to turn heel, but I say all of that to say that Eric Bischoff says it should be heel Roman Reigns taking on AJ Styles. I would be all over that. That would be, man, talk about a WrestleMania main event. That would be the shit. The absolute shit. And it just, it would be so good because they had fantastic matches against one another. And I say all of that to basically say that I could definitely see a scenario by the end of the year, by SummerSlam, AJ Styles could be the hottest babyface in the entire company, hands down. I think the only competition he's going to have in the near future is Shinsuke Nakamura. It's going to be interesting to see how that that whole thing, kind of how that dynamic plays out over the course of the rest of the year. Plus on SmackDown, so that'll be pretty cool as they kind of battle for the upper echelon babyface supremacy to a degree, and they'll probably cross paths a few times along the way. We definitely got hints of that last week, and hell, they'll both be in the same ring fighting for Money in the Bank. I'm sure that's going to electrify the crowd when it happens. But tonight, AJ is taking on Dolph Ziggler, and Dolph is kind of in something of a renaissance here lately. He has gotten an edge back to him. He's got aggressive. He's pissed off. I'm digging this Dolph Ziggler, the aggressive Dolph Ziggler who takes the fight to people. I've always said that's my favorite, and that when he's really on, like he was against Shinsuke here a few weeks ago, that is a Dolph Ziggler that I could see in a main event capacity. That is a dude who should be in a main event capacity, or at least, you know, on the outskirts of it. You know, that's a dude who is a hell of a performer and putting on a great show and doing a really solid rock, just excellent job. But he has not always been like that. Tonight, though, he was. Maybe not quite as much as he was against Nakamura, but he was taking the fight to AJ, definitely. They're fighting all over the place. Ziggler sending AJ ribs first onto the steel outside the ring there. He's selling the injury outside as we go to commercial break. When we return, they're still going at it. Both are slow to get up, trading shots there in the middle of the ring. AJ winds up dropping Ziggler with a big clothesline, keeps control, nails a sliding forearm. I love that sliding forearm. He gets up to his feet as the fans are very, very excited here. AJ counters, Ziggler counters, but AJ is able to block that and slam him on his face for another two count. He winds up blocking a Styles Clash attempt, that being Ziggler, and covering with his feet on the ropes for a two count. It was almost three, but didn't quite work out. The referee caught him before it could be a three count. AJ comes back off of that, though, drops Ziggler over his knee with the big fireman's carry, kind of that neckbreaker-y type thing that he does. AJ gets a two count off of that one. We're back and forth all over the place here. AJ blocking Famousers and Ziggler blocking Styles Clashes. We get a big headbutt from Ziggler. And finally, we go for the zigzag, but AJ's able to block his way out of that with a backbreaker. Craziness all over the place. These guys are throwing everything they've got at one another, just trying to land that big blow and knock this thing out. They're both down. Ziggler is able to come back, though, with a big knee to the jaw. He takes AJ up top for a big superplex, but AJ is able to slide out of that. He drops Ziggler face first onto the turnbuckle. Goes for a splash, but he misses. Ziggler was able to get out of the way. More back and forth between the two of them, and AJ hit a beautiful, beautiful reversal. I can't even remember what it was out of, but it was just, he twisted your boy up in the calf crusher, and it was very, very nice there in the middle of the ring, but it wound up being broken. Ziggler is able to nail the zigzag eventually, but it was not enough. He only gets a two count, so he's going to go for some sweet chin music here. He starts stomping and everything, but AJ is able to kind of dodge it, and meanwhile, Ziggler's knee kind of collapses under him because he's just been in the calf crusher, so it was a combination of sorts. Ziggler, you know, went to plant on that leg, and the knee gave out on him. Meanwhile, AJ also ducked out of the way. So, what we have is AJ rocking Ziggler from the apron. Looks like he's about to go for the phenomenal forearm, but Ziggler was able to knock him off of the ropes. He hits him with a super kick right upside the side of the head as AJ is standing up from being tangled up in the ropes, and he gets the one, he gets the two, he gets the three. Your winner of this match, rather unexpectedly, is Dolph Ziggler. I had thought that maybe AJ was in the ropes because, I mean, his leg was on the ropes afterwards, you know, and the referee was kind of noticing it, but nothing was said or done about it. I'm wondering if maybe that was supposed to be the case. like maybe AJ was supposed to be in the ropes after the fact, and that, you know, there was going to be something wonky that would happen, or that would, you know, who knows? It was supposed to be a tainted victory, perhaps, but no. Instead, what we got was a clean victory by Dolph Ziggler, taking the fight to AJ Styles and ultimately getting the job done. He messed him up on the phenomenal forearm. He kicked him right in the damn head, and he pinned him for a three count. It just seems kind of odd that they would be that close to the ropes, like, because they were so close to the ropes. It feels to me like maybe it was supposed to be something a little bit different that got botched just a touch. Maybe they weren't quite close enough to the ropes. Maybe AJ's foot was supposed to be underneath there or something. Or maybe that's exactly the way that it was supposed to go. It was just supposed to be Dolph Ziggler getting a clean victory over AJ Styles. You know what? I don't really have a big problem with that, though I have to admit, kind of surprising. I can't say that I would have predicted that one. You know what I mean? What I also could not have predicted was that this episode of SmackDown would be as good as it was. I thought it was going to be a little bit predictable, and it was in some ways, but it was actually, it delivered pretty consistently. I enjoyed what we had this evening from SmackDown. How'd you guys feel about it? Hopefully good. I will give this bad boy a grade here in just a moment. We'll break it all down, talk about everything that happened, give it a grade here in just a second, but first, I invite you to check out this right here. If you're looking for the best in pro wrestling podcasts, look no further than Lords of Pain Radio. Now entering our fifth year of bringing you the widest variety of quality, fan-friendly shows that you'll find anywhere. We kick off our week on Monday as The Late Shift with Stephen Bell comes your way live to recap and grade Monday Night Raw shortly after the show goes off the air. Tuesdays provide a double dose as Miss Fan and Jeff take a look outside the mainstream with the Global Revolution, and The Late Shift with Stephen Bell returns to cover SmackDown Live. Wednesday hits you with your audio prescription for all things wrestling with the Doc on The Doc Says, and Thursdays are as good as you can get as the Perfect 10 Wrestling Show breaks down the full week of WWE action. Fridays bring you an always topical and enlightening look from the right side of the pond, while Saturday unearths forgotten narratives along the path of the rise and fall of World Championship Wrestling as Mystic and Misfan bring you WCW The Legacy Series. That's plenty, but it's not all, as Sundays bring our Aftershock recap shows after each WWE pay-per-view, as well as a wide variety of LOP Radio special edition programs. With that sort of lineup, you just can't miss. So find us and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever your preferred podcasting resource, and be sure to pass along those five-star reviews, because it's all about the fans' voice. Your voice. Right here on Lords of Pain Radio. All right, back in the mix here, and it is time to grade this episode of SmackDown Live. But before we get to that, just one last reminder here. I will be coming your way this Sunday, as we're going to take a look back on the Aftershock program at the just having ended at that point in time, Extreme Rules. Extreme Rules is coming our way this Sunday, looking like it could be a rather interesting show. There's a lot of big stuff going down, a lot of question marks hovering here and there. Even though Raw was not the best thing in the whole wide world, the pay-per-view is actually looking pretty decent. So hopefully it will perform better than its flagship show did, last night. We'll see. Either way, whether it goes good, whether it goes bad, and it doesn't matter to me. I'm going to be here either way, talking to you guys after the fact on Aftershock, breaking it all down, everything that just happened, and we'll see what all we think about what has gone down. Who is going to be the number one contender to Brock Lesnar's Universal Championship by the end of that show? That's a big question, you guys, and it's really going to lead us nicely into Great Balls of Fire. Jesus, I still can't remember that. I can't believe that's a pay-per-view name. That's ridiculous. But we're not here to talk about Great Balls of Fire. We're not here even to talk about Extreme Rules, really, even though I would encourage you to check out the Aftershock program after Extreme Rules this Sunday evening or the next day or whenever you get the opportunity to do so. It's going to be a fun show. But for now, we're talking about another fun show. That would be SmackDown. SmackDown was pretty good stuff tonight, I would say. I really enjoyed it. It was certainly better than Raw. Maybe it's because I'm comparing it to Raw, and Raw was really kind of a stinker last night. Maybe that's why I think that SmackDown was so much more entertaining. I don't know, but I really enjoyed SmackDown this evening, with the exception of the fact that it was, you know, as I mentioned before, with Money in the Bank coming up, you know that you're basically just going to get a lot of, you know, random tag team matches and things of that nature. You're just going to have variations of, okay, the people from Money in the Bank are going to be fighting one another in this variety and this variety. Oh, okay, here's another variety. It's going to be the same shit over and over again for the next couple of weeks. It is what it is. It's the nature of the beast. It comes along with things. And there were people, as I mentioned last week, who were like, man, why don't they just I wish they would have done qualifiers or something like that. But honestly, who the hell were they going to wrestle? You know, who's really out there that they could have – who else is on the roster that they could have wrestled that would have even been remotely believable to be challenging to be in the Money in the Bank match? There's not a lot of guys. There's not a lot of options floating around out there. I'm pretty sure that if I saw Nakamura getting into the ring to face off against, like, Jey Uso, I'm pretty sure who's going to be winning that one. You know what I mean? So – and I'm fine with this. You know, I think it is kind of better than the alternative in a way, but it is a bit paint by numbers. That said, I mean, with the sheer quality of the guys on the roster and the quality of the matches that are produced of it, you know, I've mentioned before that paint by number, it means that it's kind of straightforward and predictable, but, you know, paint by number pictures are pretty. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be ugly and gross and shitty just because it's painted by numbers. Sometimes something good can come out of that. And that's what we got this evening, because even though the opening segment was just so ridiculous, I could have written it. From the moment that I saw Kevin Owens standing there in the ring, I could have written the entire segment. And I would have, if I paused it, written down what I thought was going to happen, I swear to you, I would have been exactly right. And most of you probably would have been right as well. You know what I mean? All you need to know was that AJ was going to be facing off against Dolph Ziggler. Okay, that takes those two guys out of the equation of the six people in Money in the Bank. That means that the other four guys are going to have a tag team match against each other. That's going to happen, okay? That's just the way that it goes. Raw's been doing the same thing with this whole Fatal 5-Way thing coming up. They've been doing the exact same thing for the last few weeks. So, you know, it's across the brand. It's kind of lazy. Frankly, they can't come up with anything better to do than to give us the exact same crap in both shows in mildly different forms and with just different dudes in the ring. It's hard to complain about it too much when you have something as good as what we got when this went down. Shinsuke Nakamura and Sami Zayn versus Baron Corbin and Kevin Owens was good stuff. That was a very entertaining match. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I also enjoyed that the New Day showed up. That was a fun segment. They felt fresh again, you know, after not being as big a fan of the New Day as I was at one point here over the last little bit. I was happy to be happy to see them, you know what I mean? It did feel fresh. It did feel kind of new. It felt like they've been a bit reinvigorated, and I'm excited to see where they go from here. Hopefully they're not talking about ice cream and shit. Hopefully they're coming out there and they're going to, you know, have some fun and do some cool stuff, but at the same time, maybe they're going to be wrestling some good matches and whatnot. And I'm looking forward to the match against the Usos. I think that's going to be fun interaction over the next few weeks. It was good to see the New Day this evening. The Fatal 5-Way Elimination Match thing never did really go off, but the big fight between all of them that led to the big announcement of a Women's Money in the Bank, that was awesome sauce. I really liked the big brawl all over the place. I liked that we're getting a Women's Money in the Bank. That was a great way to build up to it. I liked that I was right from last week and that I predicted this. That makes me feel kind of cool. But I really like the path that they took to get to where they are right now. This is going to be good stuff when it breaks down. And I forgot to mention that, you know, we had the look back at the Punjabi celebration and, of course, the big Tyler Breeze and Fandango thing, the Fashion Files. Fashion Files, I could watch that every single week. I hope that they keep going and going and going and going and going. I like that damn Energizer Bunny. I am more than ready to keep seeing that. That's awesome stuff. Speaking of Breezango, their match against the Colognes was very entertaining there at the beginning. And then as it went along, it turned into a real wrestling match. And we got to see that these guys are very talented in the ring, all of them, all four of them. And I don't know, it had a little bit of everything. It was a quality match, worth watching. Let's see here. What else did we have? We had Orton coming out, and though it was a bit iffy with him talking about, you know, how his grandpappy would have slapped him if he would have lost to one of them fellers like Jinder Mahal or whatever the hell. He didn't say it like that. He said that his grandfather would slap him if he were alive for losing the WWE title to a guy like Jinder Mahal. But that, if you're Randy Orton and you have a reputation for what you have a reputation for, and the way that he kind of, his viewpoints that he espouses from time to time on social media to the consternation of a certain group of the audience, you know, that can sound the wrong way. But I'm really just picking on him. I don't give a shit. You know, what do I care about it? It was an okay segment, you know. Mahal was weak with his scripted out thing. It was the worst part of the whole thing, and that didn't surprise me at all. Because honestly, right now on SmackDown, the main event scene is the weakest part of the entire show, frankly. Whether it's Randy Orton or Jinder Mahal, whoever the champion is, I don't give a shit. It's the weakest part of the show because all the other parts of the show are really kind of fairly entertaining at this given point in time, especially going into Money in the Bank. So this was really the weakest segment of the entire show, and the main event delivered. AJ and Dolph Ziggler, it absolutely delivered. Surprise ending there. I did not see Dolph Ziggler getting the victory, but I'm glad that he did. It really makes him look like a more viable as we head towards Money in the Bank, because he now has a clean pinfall victory over AJ Styles, which, again, you wouldn't have expected. So it's pretty cool that this went down for him, because it does put him firmly into the mix. Still very doubtful he's going to be winning Money in the Bank, but hey, you know, he did just get a pinfall over AJ Styles. That counts for something, you know? So this was a solid episode of SmackDown, man. There was no really super standout, like, badass match. But all the matches were pretty good in their own way, and even the pseudo match that was supposed to be a match and wound up just being a fight was good. So I'm giving this one, this gets an A-. Not quite an A. It would have needed a really strong match for that, but an A- is what this episode of SmackDown gets, taking the crown back. They're the better show this week over Monday Night Raw, which was not very hard at all to pull off. Join me here Sunday night for Aftershock. I will be here with you. We will have ourselves a good time as we talk about Extreme Rules. Until then, you guys, please do me the favor of taking care of yourselves out there in the really real world. And remember that nothing is trivial, all right? Much love, guys. We'll catch you next time. Bye, everybody. Bye.